Welcome to the London Welsh Rugby Club podcast.
This week's episode is with a member who has been involved with the club for over 59 years. 20 years as a player, 20 years as a team manager across Dragons, Druids and First Team, and who didn't miss a First Team game for over 15 seasons. Since retirement, he still volunteers as part of the supporters club and meets up with his London Welsh mates for breakfast and lunches. This club means so much to Morlaith. But Morlaith means so much to us. He has made so many friends and some great connections via the club. It was a real pleasure to hear all about his involvement. Enjoy. Welcome to the pod, former London Welsh player and team manager, Morlaith Evans. How are you, Morlaith?
Very good, thanks, Gareth.
Well, look, you know, how are you enjoying this season so far?
Yeah, it's great in retirement, really. I can come down when I want to and see all the games. It's nice that we're on the way back. I'm really pleased how the amateur section has really picked up the club and run with it, with a program as well in their five or six seasons of what they're going to do.
That's good. Look, this is now, I understand, your 59th season being part of the London Welsh family. And, you know, obviously we'll get to understand how you got to London Welsh. But these days, you still love coming to the club, watching the games, catching up with your London Welsh mates, don't you? And even today, you've been at the club and out with a bunch of you for lunch, you know, and these are all London Welsh people that you've been out with, aren't they?
Yes, they are, indeed. And the normal bunch, I organise the lunches in Cafe Mama's third or fourth Friday of every month. And we've got the basic people who come along, like Terry Williams, Joe Jones, Roy Meredith, occasionally Phil Thomas, David Williams, the winger, Neil Thomas, the second row, Roger Tiller is in charge of the archives and the John Dawes room, and Dave Crompton, which is a nice figure of people to be with round on the table at Cafe Mama's.
And what's the qualifying criteria to get into that gang? Because it sounds like a great group of people, Morlaith.
Yeah, it is. I think age has got a lot to do with it.
So I'm way too young.
You're way, way too young, mate. You've got to be retired.
Okay.
Minimum.
But look, you know, that's something for me to aspire to with, you know, I think, like, you know, if it's 15 years' time, 20 years' time, right, I've got a collection of great London Welsh mates who meet up on a regular basis, reminisce, talk about the season, still around the club. I mean, that to me fills me with so much warmth hearing that people do that.
Yeah, oh, it's fantastic. Well, it's great for me as well, being involved in the club in the past, especially in the first team. And it's all fast flowing, you know, you're always down for the Tuesday training and the Thursday training and all that at that time, because everybody was amateur then back in the day.
Yeah.
And then it's all changed from there on. And now, I suppose in one way, I do miss it a bit because it was full on, you know, virtually every day of the week was full on.
Yeah.
Especially the training nights and all the stuff I had to do. And as well, I started on my own. And then Jan, my late wife, she came down to sit with me and, you know, pick me up from work.
Yeah.
And that sort of started the duo, really. From there on, we all got together, you know, and she did most of the admin and I did all the most physical work
We'll come on to that, like, in terms of how, you know, what you did and your involvement with the club.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's, but obviously, you have this lunch once a month, but is it every Friday morning you have breakfast with a...
Oh, yes.
Is it a similar gang as well?
Similar gang, except Dave Barrett or Jeff Williams don't come, but there's... All the other crew are still there. Yeah, but it was normally we started off really that in the COVID era, or just after the COVID.
Yeah,
we Terwin used to pick the baguettes, you know, and the and the morning filling from Greedy's in Isleworth, and we used to drive around here. And then obviously the club was shut then, and we sat outside like mad with our little overcoats, you know, and the bubble hats and everything, just to keep nice and warm. But we must have been mad, or how much we loved the place, I suppose.
Well, to me, it's
what's really important is connections, right? And this club has enabled you to have many connections, and we'll go through that, right? And that fills me, as I said, with so much warmth that, you know, you all take the effort. Your connections are so valuable to you that you take the time, even during the pandemic, you'd come outside, have food together and a laugh, probably.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. We always take the mick out of each other, as you do, but you can only do that once you've known people for 40, 50 years or less, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that's amazing. Look, do you still go, do you go to all the games, home and away with the club, or do you just tend to focus now on more like home games and things like that?
When I was in the first team at that time, I didn't miss any games at all, pre-season or all the season games. I never missed one. And I had cancer, I had colon cancer in between all that. And I still didn't miss any games, unbelievably. So in that time, you know, we watched every game from... I got into the first team when David Gwynevor-Jones was made into liaison officer in the club.
Yeah.
And I was a Druids manager then, or admin. And then I was invited to come to the first team, which I did halfway through. We played up at Wasps.
And this to be as a first-team manager, yeah?
As a first-team manager, okay.
Look, I say, we'll come on to that when we talk about sort of your I call it your career, but your volunteering stint with London Welsh. Look, you know, what I want to know is, like, as in now, do you tend to go and watch a lot of the games home and away, or do you just tend to see games at Old Deer Park?
Yeah, mainly home games. Yeah. I said then, after I finished in 07, 08, I'm not going to go watch all the games then, but I don't know how many games I did go with or well as part of, you know, from that 93 up to 07, 08, really. So I don't know. So I was a lucky boy.
That's a lot. No, it's brilliant. I mean, it's only a great experience, I'm sure. But look, you know, let's delve into your journey now then, Model Ice. Look, you know, let's take it back to the beginning. You know, a little boy in Wales. So where in Wales was home for you? Yeah.
Oh, a little village outside Cadwaley called Manidagarrig.
That sounds a very, very, very Welsh part of Wales.
Yes, I was very, very lucky. I was brought up there and the village spoke Welsh. So I was very, very, very lucky to be able to do that, because in Wales, in certain villages, they might be mainly English, but Manidagarrig and Cadwaley were quite... speaking the native language in Welsh, so that was good for me.
And to our English listeners, that means mountain stone, yeah?
Yeah, mounted, or stones of Mount, or mounted of stones, yeah. There is a Manydd Cerrig, where the great Nigel Owens was born.
Uh-huh.
So they were similar, the singular one,
Cerrig,
and Cerrig. Which I was from.
Yeah, gosh, look at that. And so when did you first pick up the oval ball? Because that's played a big part in your life. So where was that? Would that be a primary school or a local rugby club?
No, funny enough, I didn't play any school rugby at all. I went to Ballyport Secondary Modern School. And when I was leaving in sixth form, they were just organising a rugby teams just then. So really, I only played rugby for Kidwelly for about 2 or 3 years in that time. So really, I didn't play till I was 17, 18, until I was about 20.
Right.
But then I came up to London, of course, after that.
So you said you played for Kidwelly. So Kidwelly was your local rugby club.
Yeah, my local.
And you only started playing as an adult.
Yeah, I only played there as an adult. Yeah.
So there's literally no rugby in schools and no junior rugby at all for anyone?
No, junior rugby. Well, I didn't, because my parents really saw the not the bad side, but what could happen, you playing rugby. So they didn't really cheer me on to play rugby. They said, oh, you could, what's the matter? You could break a leg playing rugby, that type of thing.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so that's, there wasn't too much encouragement on my family side to push me on to play rugby.
So what did you do? What was your hobbies and pastime as a teenager growing up in Wales then, if you weren't playing rugby?
Yeah, I left school at 15 years old. I didn't go to the modern, so I did grammar school or anything, so I didn't go forward into university or colleges or anything. So when I started, left school at 15, And I found work with a local company in Manilagarig, where I worked for them for a while. And then from then on, I had time then to go down to Kidwelly and play a bit of rugby. But I played in the backs then, in the centre of all places. I played my first game for Kidwelly Wade against Pembroke Dock Quins. Yeah, and that's back in the... That would be in mid-50s or late-50s, rather.
So, yeah, so straight from school, so got a job, played for your local rugby club, Kidwelly, and then after, so you played for Kidwelly for two or three seasons? And
yeah,
then,
something like that, yeah, something like that.
And so what was the plan then? Is that when you left Wales to come to London?
Yeah, when I worked for the local company, you know, everything is a bit insular in Wales a bit, you know, especially little villages and all that. And then I started working around Wales and I could see what else was going on in the wider world, really. And that's when I had this slight wanderlust to move out of Wales, really, and see something new, which I could do. And then January 1962, I left Kidwelly and moved to London, which I was fortunate, really, because my... father had relations of people living in the Notting Hill area mm-hmm. of London. And then I moved with them for two or three years. And of course, the rugby came to mind then. And then somebody suggested I should go. I don't know who it was in the group that told me to go to Wanstead of all places, but I did. That was a nice experience, you know, in an Essex club. And I was there for... two or three years, or over 2 years.
That's quite a trek from Notting Hill to Wanstead, though, training.
Train and play.
Wow. And did you come to London, though? Did you have a job already when you're here?
No,
or did you just came here
on and off
found work?
Yeah? To find work.
Okay.
Yeah, which I did on most of the building sites and that type of thing. Until I came to London Welsh. When I came to London Welsh in January 1965, and then I met my late wife then one night up in the Marlborough when you know, after the game, when you're half cut or that, and she didn't seem my best side off.
And where's the Marlborough? Is that in the middle of town?
That's in the top of the hill in Richmond.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Before
yes.
Before you come up to
yes.
the big church there.
No, I know where it is. You know? I know exactly where it is. Yes.
Yeah.
The top of Church Road.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Before you come up to where Mick Jagger used to live.
Yeah,
that,
with the massive garden back in the garden.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, lovely Jewish garden.
So, socially, so people would, after playing for London Welsh, we'll come on to your playing stuff at London Welsh, people would have a few drinks in the club here, but then you dispersed.
Well, the usual. I think they still do the same thing now. I think they stipulate then to stay in the club, you know. That's where we need the help this way, and that's where you need the money to go back into the bar so the club can financially see the money going back into the club.
Yeah.
But that type of thing.
But obviously, after you met your missus in the Marlborough, was that a post-match day or just a general day?
That was one of the Saturdays.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the home games of many. why we met up there, I don't really know. But that started my relationship from there on, really. And she sort of got me organised, work-wise and everything. So that's why I went on the government training course and the plumbing course and that type of thing to get me a trade. Because when I came up to London, I have no trade, no qualification whatsoever. So really, from then on, she got me by the scruff of the neck, really.
So before we talk about your rugby career, let's talk about your trade then. So you lived in Notting Hill for a few years and you picked up work and then met your late wife, Janice. And then she encourage you to get a trade, and so have you been a plumber all your life? Is that what you've been?
I was on the physical side, but like everything else in life, as you get older, when you hit your 50s, you know, you're not so mobile, not so flexible.
Speak for yourself, Bondi. Speak for yourself.
And then on, you know, I did work. My biggest contract was up in HMS Warrior in Northwood. I had about 24 plumbers there. Mm-hmm. There used to be one big base were with a big mass hall in the middle, and then the billets all the way around, and everything was interconnected.
So did you set up your own plumbing company?
No, I didn't. I was a coward. I didn't do that. I worked for lots of companies in the city and that type of thing. And I was very lucky, really. I worked all my life. I didn't miss much time or anything at all. I just, in the end, when I, while I was in the first team, that's when I had cancer. And then I finished working then when I was end of when I was 64, I think it was 63, 64. And after that, because I had at that time, I had a storm of back and everything for 12 months. Uh-huh. I knew there was a reversal there coming, but that was a hell of an experience to have that, you know.
Yeah.
But I did get over it after about a couple of months, really, get used to your body,
yeah.
What you can eat, what you can't eat,
yes,
and that type of thing. And that's why Terwin is in the same situation now.
Yeah.
You know, as I admire him for, and he still hasn't changed your lifestyle at all, really.
Good. It's just, I suppose, it's, for those listening, it's probably like an adaptive life, isn't it?
It is adapting you. And you know you can't eat any, you can't go out and eat whatever you like, whatever. Because anything, a certain skins on certain foods and that type of thing, you know, the system can't cope with it.
Sure.
So you've got to know exactly what to eat and all that. So that was a hell of an experience.
Well, look, I'm glad you're here to tell the tale, and so that, which is great. Look, so a great and distinguished career with your trade.
Mm.
And then so you're playing rugby at Wanstead. And then, so what made you come to London Welsh?
A lot of people, then I thought, you know, I was playing in their first team and all. I think I started in the backs again, because I started in the backs in Kidwelly. And again, I was, I wondered, I heard so much about London Welsh. And I thought, right, I must go there. And a lot of people, Welsh people there, said, don't go to London Welsh. There's a lot of crachach there between the first team and the rest. They said, don't go there. But I didn't listen to any of that advice. So I did come down to London Welsh, as I said, in January 65. I was lucky. I was in the front row then, which I played the most. Started in Wanstead, but I started in the backs, but I moved to the front row at Wanstead, so that gave me the impetus, really.
That's quite a transition. You don't get many going straight in the front. They might have gone back row, but not to the front.
No,
so
no,
what made you choose the front row, or was it a choice thing?
Well, I thought that would have been my best situation, really, because I'm only 5'7", you know. I was around naturally about 15 and a half stone. And that's why I moved there, really. But then I realized when I got like people like Terwin and Peter Price, they couldn't get a game here,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they played, they were captain of their school teams, grammar school teams, and stuff like that. So I was very, very fortunate. I came along, I was in the right position, I suppose, to be in the front row. And I had my first game against Saracens away in Highgate. No, it's Highgate, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Gwynav Davis, you know, and with Kedrick.
And what sort of welcome did you get when you saw, so you're like, you know, they must have, because this is quite a transient area when we are here.
Yeah.
So obviously people coming and going all the time. So what sort of welcome was it? And what squad did you go into first, and how many teams were they running at that time?
Yeah, at that time, I was very fortunate. Obviously, the first team, Druids, Dragons, A's, Extra A, and Hockeys. And every even the Hockeys had two or three teams eventually. It's amazing. I was around at the right time.
So training then, you got like, that's like, so that's 6 to 8 squads you've mentioned there. So who trains, and how did they, you must have had like over 100 here on a Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, there was.
That's a lot for pitch two, isn't it?
I know. But they did, everybody trained together, especially for the first half hour, 3/4 hour. And everybody trained together, all running for the first team or hockeys or whatever. And then you train together, and then they'd split up into our teams then, whichever the teams are going to be for the Saturdays, and you train together as a groups then after the initial training, like everybody there.
But the head coach for the first wouldn't choose all the teams across the club, or would there have a selection committee? Or
there was a selection committee then, and I think the captains had a lot of sway as well.
Okay,
that type of thing, really. So that was great.
So let's talk about your rugby journey then with London Welsh. So you started in one of the A's or the extra A's?
I started with Kedric Davies, poor, poor man. He just passed away a couple of years ago. Yeah, nice guy, tremendous nice guy he was. And then I played there mainly for the first couple of seasons, I think, in the extra A. Then I got up to the A's, and I played there for a season or two, or it seemed that way. And then I moved to the Dragons, and I paid quite a bit in the Dragons. And then I realized, being in the front row at 50 and a half stone, it's not going to cut it, really. So at that time, John was captain of the first team, and he was coaching them. They were one of the fittest club teams around at that time. That's why they won so many games.
Yeah.
They were so, so fit, and obviously great players. And at that time, we had a where the gym is now, where the Barch, one of the Barch gyms now, at that time they bought a multi-purpose fitness machine where there's about six or seven individual around it, so you can do different exercises whichever unit you went around this machine, and that's what I did. In the end, I did half my training out, and I did quite a bit in the gym. Or I used to come down a little bit early to go into the gym to try and put some weight on so I could stabilize myself and make sure I could play in the Dragons and Druids, you know, at that time. And that's the only way. That's what I did. I went from 15 and a half stone nearly up to 18 stone purely through doing the gym work.
So muscle?
Yeah.
Wow. And that's
muscle and probably fat.
That's just you being ambitious as an amateur rugby player to see where this journey could take you. Yeah. So you then got more games than Druids?
Yeah, in the end, yes. I probably played more games than the Dragons, but I did play a lot of games for the first team. And the thing was, funny enough, I think I played better rugby than when I was over 30 than I did prior to that.
Well, that's the
purely through the size and everything.
Also, front row is experience, isn't it? And you had experience in the front row.
Yeah.
You got into the shape for front row.
Yeah.
So you say you played in the first team?
Well, I played for the club then, as the first team. When I opened some grounds, I played down in Abbey in Reading.
Yeah.
There's Abbey Reading. And Julian Davies came off, so I could get on. That was three subs, I think, at that time. But because it was an opening of the ground, I got on. So, and Edgar Thomas gave me £5 expenses. My God, what am I going to do? Shall I frame this or not? I thought of myself. I didn't in the end, but I thought about it. You know, but my first expenses for London Welsh, playing in their first team at that point.
So if you're looking, like, who were the sort of characters that you'd played? If you think about the 71 Lions, there'd have been, the seven from London Welsh who were the 71 Lions. They'd have been on a training pitch with you on Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Did any of them ever play like in the Druids or Dragons with you at any stage, Bodleis, do you think?
Some would come back down. Not the big superstars, as I call them. They were superstars at that time. But it was fantastic, the feeling. You know, you'd watch the first team or the internationals first team players.
Yeah.
You'd watch them on the television on a Saturday. I come Tuesday night to be out there with them training. It made you feel 10 foot tall.
I bet it.
Absolutely fantastic. Really, really was.
You know, you hear stories of like the London Welsh of the late 60s and early part of the 70s, and we were the best team in the UK, weren't we? Oh. And you were here. You were part of that.
I know, part of that. I was around at that time.
Yeah.
How lucky was I, eh? How lucky.
And
the thing is, that time that we played in the Druids, Dragons, or whatever, the London Welsh name then, if you played, was worth 10 to 15 points before you started.
Yeah.
But you had to play well for that, though.
So everyone's, with that depth of people, everyone is playing, everyone's driving the standards, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
It's no wonder we were doing well. Did other clubs that we were playing against, like you said, you made your debut against Saracens.
Yeah.
Did they have, like, did they have that many teams as well? Yeah, or were we quite unique?
No. Most of the clubs, even like here, Richmond and the London Scottish and Arlequins and Blackheath, and of course, and Roslyn Park, they were, Blackheath and Roslyn Park were higher then.
Yeah.
At that time. They were on the same level as London Welsh.
Okay.
They were London Welsh to play them at that time. Yeah.
So you played for 20 years for London Welsh. So if you look back at your playing highlights, what would stick out for you, really?
For me, it was a great honour to be in the first team or the team that played for the club on those nights in Abbey Reading. And I went down to Llanelli as well to play again, opening the ground at New Dock Stars in Llanelli. And that was one of the big highlights for me. And I played the whole game at that time. So, you know, people like JT were supposed to play. Well, there was a lot of first team players and a mixture of other boys in the team as well.
And who were sort of the key sort of characters or captains you might have played for, you know, in that time? Because I'm sure, you know, being here 20 years as a player, you would have had quite a few captains that might have, you know, inspired you to dig that bit deeper, you know, when you're going to war on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm trying to think now. You know, just bear with us a tick now.
That's okay.
I don't want to miss it. Some of the players I did then. What I know there was...
So to explain to our listeners, right? So Ron Knight has done some preparation, as a lot of our guests do, just to make sure, you know, he hasn't missed any sort of any valuable people or experiences out in his lengthy career with London Welsh.
Yeah, I want to name a few people at that time, you know, because I played most of the rugby then, from X-Rays up to the A's and Dragons, I presume. There was a lot of people there, like obviously, like my first game when I had for the X-Rays was Kedrick Davis, and then there was, as I went up the team, there was Derek Williams, and he lives in New Zealand now. Simon John, and he lives in Carmarthen now. He's been down there for years. Paul Miller. Paul Miller was a great guy. He loved organizing stuff, especially a tour. I went to Canada three times with Paul Miller, and he was organising the tours and everything.
Was that a club tour, or was that a tour for a certain squad?
Yeah, that was a sort of Druids Dragon squad, really.
And did sponsors pay for this, or was it all self-funded?
No, it's self-funded. As far as I know, we put money together to do it. But
and why Canada three times running? It must have got quite a good welcome there. Or beer really was cheap?
Probably, and Paul Miller knew more people out there. Okay. he loved organising things like that, Paul Miller. And then there was a captain in the Dragon called Terry Lewis. I used to call him Rucker Lewis. you know, he's passed away now for all return. And there was Gareth Lewis. You call it Cut Easy Lewis. Every game he'd come out with a cut high or something or other. A good player there. And there was Simon Hughes. He lives down the coast now. There was Richard Chapek. His parents were Polish, but he played a lot of rugby. And Glenn Richards, he was a good player. He was captain of the Druids then, and he played for the first team as well. But he's passed away now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. And Brian Williams is another guy who's passed away. He was captain as well. Nigel Rees still going strong, as we know.
Tough man,
yeah. Steve Parsons.
Yeah, Porky.
Porky Parsons, the only man I know who can stand up and sleep by the bar without falling over.
He still does that on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so Jim Williams, of course, he played in the first and Dreamers and all that. And he lives in New Zealand. He's a teacher down there now. And there was Mark Walbioff as well. He was a good coach for the Druids. He was in the Druids coaching for a number of years. Great guy. And a great player was Brian Probert. I played with him for years in the Druids and Dragons. Great, great character.
So it must be, you know, obviously, you know, it's impossible.
I've got a few, and I've still missed a lot more.
You know, you've played, you know, 20 years. It'd be hundreds of people who would know you, because they've played for London Welsh for that time. So what about, you know, the coaches you had then? Because did they, like, obviously, you know, we had some, you know, you said mentioned Nigel Rees coach for a while. We've had John Dawes. But, you know, what about other coaches you felt had, you know, contributed so much to the sort of the culture of London Welsh, really?
Was, Howard Evans coaching, and Gareth James. Now, he's a good club man. He was very unfortunate, really, that JPR was around, because we know JPR's absolutely fantastic. Absolutely was. And Gareth was playing at the same time. So, really, he was curtailed. But he played a lot of first-team rugby.
So, we could have had the two best Welsh fullbacks in the world.
If that was open for him, people like that, really, the standout, like Mark Wolbeoff, Howard Evans, and Gareth James.
So, what I'd like to understand is, you know, you've got... You all these teams play. So some would play at Old Deer Park here. Some would play over, you know, past the in the pools in the park there.
Yeah.
And everyone would come back to the club afterwards.
Yeah.
So it must have been the social scene. You know, I know you met your wife, but just to have so many people that you know who are playing rugby at London Welsh and supporting them, it must be such a vibrant social scene here in the 70s.
Yeah, I know. And then, of course, where we've done the John Dawes room lately, well, that everybody, no matter who was at home then, they come upstairs and had a meal at the same time. The first and whatever other team was playing at home. That was fantastic.
So you could have three or four teams at home, really, couldn't you, quite easily?
But mainly it was two teams.
Two teams, okay.
Yeah, mainly. And as you said, some of them played pool on the other side, pools of the park, in that part of the Old Deer Park at a certain time.
And the people, like, was it like, you know, people would stay here till, like, you know, they got kicked out at 11, 12, 1, is that sort of thing? Yeah,
it was. There were so many people and players and a lot of supporters. We used to go to the Bowls Club, amazingly. And then, of course, there used to be a conductor, they'd be on the table, you know, conducting the voice, singing all the Welsh songs. And they'd be there for an hour and a half, and then they'd come back over to the clubhouse. Because there's so many people watching those days that, you know, they had, I think they started pulling the beers before the end of the game. So they had the beers lined up under the counter, ready for the crowd to come in to buy the beers.
So, in a first team game here in the 70s, then, so what would an average crowd be? A couple of thousand?
Oh, more than that.
So, how could they accommodate all that in this clubhouse and the Bowls Club? It's impossible.
Yeah, I know. Probably, obviously, somebody might go to the Shaftesbury or whatever, whichever was the nearest pub, I suppose, you know. So, it's always a fight to get in, and
please don't tell me the Cafe Mama was here then, was it?
That I'm not sure.
Okay,
I don't know. I know he's been here for a while, but great place.
And did Janice love coming here as well then? Because
she came with her father, which is Gronny Vaughan Owen, and he was a treasurer of the club back in the time when the clubhouse opened. Gronny Vaughan Owen.
So that's Janice's dad.
That's Janice's dad.
And so Janice was born and bred in London?
Yeah, she was.
Okay.
Honeypot Lane.
Where is it?
I'm north London somewhere. Honeypot Lane.
But obviously, you didn't meet her. You met in the Marlborough, as you said earlier.
Yes, I did.
But you'd come here and was Janice part of the WAGS brigade, so the wives and girlfriends, sort of the players? Would she have known lots of the other wives and girlfriends?
Yeah, not as such. She got involved mainly with the kitchen. At those days, we used to do the food. They used to bring the food to the club, amazingly.
So that, oh my gosh.
They cook the food in their houses, and then they bring it down in the car.
Wow. Yeah, this is like, again, all volunteer based.
Yeah, all voluntary based.
So would they get their expenses back from the club for doing that, do you think? Or they just provide
for
the players?
Like me, I never got paid for that type of anything. Yeah. No, I was pure amateur.
bonkers, isn't it?
I know it's bonkers, but amazing. That's the way it was then.
Yeah, no, I love that. I'm sure every rugby club was the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, rugby clubs live and die by their volunteers, especially at the community level. Don't they? So it's like,
I know.
That's great.
So
you finished playing in, so 20 years would be your 85, 86?
Yeah, 85, 86 I finished, yeah.
And then, so why did you finish playing?
Well, I decided then I was coming up to 45. I loved it, though, you know. And the thing was, I finished playing then, and then I got into admin, the team manager admin of the Dragons.
Yeah.
For 3-4 years, whatever it was. I never actually checked what date is what after playing. And then I still played for the Dragon, you know, once or twice. Friday evening was horrendous. Well, you couldn't go out, really, because you know the phone call would come along. Well, it's so-and-so, yeah, from the Druids. We need 3 or 4 players off you. Is that okay? And then you'd have to phone 3 or 4 more, 5, 6 people to try and get a team from the A's. And sometimes it was nice. I mean, some players I knew were props, and they didn't like training much, but I know they could pop well in the Dragons, no problem. So I always had 2 or 3 boys in the background. So whenever you were really short, you know, so a lot of people got up to the Druids, I could phone them up and call them to come and play with the Dragons.
But this is all done, obviously, pre-internet, landline only.
Yeah.
So if they're out, they don't get a game.
No.
So did people stay in by the phone? Wait, because were they were selected on a Thursday, and then obviously people get injured or become unavailable.
Yeah,
and they
then
have to,
Friday night was the night.
And so people would generally stay in.
Yeah, yeah. But back prior to that, we used to have selection meetings at the Cock Tavern in Oxford Circus. Everybody used to go up there.
What day was that?
That would be on a Monday, I think. I think it was Monday.
So Monday Cock Tavern, Tuesday, Thursday training. So would admin person be a Tuesday, Thursday training?
Yeah.
What would you do on Wednesday?
Funny enough, not much.
So Friday, you're ringing people around to go to the team.
Yeah, yeah.
Saturday, rugby.
Yeah,
Sunday, roast dinner.
Roast dinner. And you could relax a bit. Oh, of course. Paul Beaton would then. What a great guy. Mr. Stats, as they call him.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. Yeah, from 93 till 07, 08, we used to phone us up every Sunday morning, and we used to give him the team, and the people came on, the people came off, who the scorers were, and everything like that. So every week, you'd have all the stats from my time and Jan's time, from 93 to 07, 08. There wasn't one...
For all the teams?
From my first team.
Okay, first team. Right.
First team then.
Yeah.
So all the stats, all the teams, and all the scorers were down for every game.
So if they're wrong, it's your fault?
Oh, probably, yeah.
Oh, my God. So your team manager from when you retired, because you sort of retired, you'd fill in.
Yeah, and I did fill in, I don't know how many games I did play. But then, of course, I played for Gareth James Vets team of the old stars, you know, like... Gareth James himself and Mike Roberts of that ilk and Jim was playing Tom's dad.
Don't worry. So look, if you've played so long, so that's like so you had an all so you played you retired, but you played some Vets games when you could.
Yeah,
but your key role was team admin, and you sort of alluded to a bit what team admin's about. So it was a bit of selection.
Yeah,
and it's usually a thankless task at time, isn't it? You know, because
it's funny that was kept me in good stead though from the Dragons.
Yeah,
and then I went up to the Druids, and then I was called up when they asked David Gwynedd-Jones to go do liaison officer. So that's when I started then. They invited me up to, we had a games against Wasps in midweek, away up at Wasps. And then from that day on, that's what it started.
So you're first team manager from when until when?
From 93 until 07, 08.
Wow. And you said you'd never missed a game?
Never missed a game.
And was it the dream team, you and Janice doing it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And she, as I said, she only came down to pick me up because I was there first. And then she sat down by my side. You know, we used to do valuables bags with all their names on.
Yeah.
And everybody put their valuables, so we made sure we looked after that. And whatever else was wanted to do in the evenings, you know, with all the information or whatever was going on that night or on that week.
But also, so, did the team manager have to organise like the buses and things like that?
Oh yeah, well, you'd the main man was the coach.
Yeah,
you work around the coaches what they wanted.
Yeah, tried to on eggshells sometimes.
Sometimes
they've lost a few games.
Yeah, then Kelvin Bryan used to phone me up occasionally and say, "What's going on? What are the problems?" And I
maybe,
tried to answer.
Maybe not that politely sometimes.
he was concerned, but okay. He put a lot of money in Kelvin.
Yes. I know he has.
Kelvin Bryan Corr. I don't know how much money he put in because, you know, every month was about back in that day, 1.2 maybe.
Yeah, it's
1.2 monies then.
Yeah,
Keep us in the championship.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot. Look, you know, he's poured a lot of money, his heart and soul into the club, and you know, we'll always be grateful for that.
Yeah, I know. I was very grateful for that, but the sad thing, really, was around that nobody else really came in. You could support him in, you know, to make sure that we were really flying. I must admit.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? You know, professional rugby, semi-professional rugby is very, very challenging to get that right.
And, absolutely.
Hopefully, we're getting it right currently. But you know, we'll be humble about that because
you've got experience yourself now. You know what it's like on a week-to-week basis.
So organizing the buses, but so with the coaches you were dealing with, so you've quite a few coaches in that time as a first team manager.
Yeah,
you know, I don't want to say like who was your favorite, but who did you like working with?
I tell you what was great. When I did come in, there was John Dawes then, in '93, and things didn't quite work out for John, which I was sorry about that. It really was. And then, of course, Nigel Rees and Bruce Bradley came along to tidy things up towards the end, you know, whenever the end was at that time. And then, of course, Mike Gosling came from Wasps, and he was from 94 to 97. And again, towards the end of that, the trouble with Mike, he was a great coach and all that, but he wanted to be in charge of everything within the club, you know, financial, you name it. He wanted to be in charge of it. That was a problem. He's good though. He turned the club around at that time.
Yeah.
And we did go up, you know, so he had some qualities, but he wanted to do everything really, which probably his downfall in the end. And again, end of that time from 94, 97, Nigel Rees again and Bruce Bradley came in to tidy up the end of the season. And of course, when my experience came in, it was Clive Griffiths. Well, you know, Clive, he played rugby union with the Llanelli, and he had one cap for Wales on the wing. Then he went up north. So he did professional rugby union and rugby league.
Yeah.
So he came along, and I learned hell of a lot of him. You know, the way he managed, he brought in his crew with him. And
this is the time where we're turning sort of semi-pro. People like Roland Phillips down.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. He had three or four
Scott Roskin?
Roskill, yeah, he was around then. He came in later. But the guy I thought he was Andy Courier.
Yeah.
What a player. He's the only guy I've seen go on the outside break virtually every bloody time. He went glided round, you know. He found the gap every time. He was a great player at that level.
Yeah,
championship level.
You're not the first to have mentioned him, by the way.
No.
He's a many a favourites player.
He was the same quality as a guy prior to him. I'm going back in when I was playing and all that. Was Dan Fooey. He was another great centre. Him and Ackerman and people like that.
I'd love to meet Clive because I've recorded a podcast with Clive and he messaged me from time to time when something happens at London Welsh and he messaged me when JPR sadly passed away the other week he's written a nice tribute about, you know, meeting JPR, you know, within the last 6 months of his life, but he still holds his time, you know, even though Clive's had a great career in rugby, his time at London Welsh is very special to him.
No, I know. Yeah, he loved it.
Yeah.
He loved it. Yeah. Do you want to mention any more? I went to Clive, and then Adrian Davis. What a nice guy.
No chance. He's not a nice guy.
He's not going to coach anything. He's too nice, this guy. What's he going to do? And then the other...
But he was here for 5 years as a coach. That was his first coaching job, wasn't it?
Yeah. 97 to 99.
That's Clive Griffiths, I think. Adrian Davis was 2000, I think.
2000, 2001 to 2005, 2006. And he had people with him, was Mark Langley, forward coach. And Murray Beckett was our fitness coach. You know, he's full of muscles all... Murray, yeah, great guy. So the really team got really fit there.
It's funny because the other week, I think a lot of the players were in the club celebrating someone's 50th.
Yeah, that was Richie Elliott.
Yeah, so people like Matt Vines was here, Flo, Dunlap-Wynn Pugh.
Yeah, that was the same time as Adrian Davis.
Yes.
And they also all blended together with Matt Fitzgerald as captain. And he has somebody like... the thing is, when you start mentioning lots of names, you don't want to leave anybody out.
Don't
but
worry.
Again, it's one of those catch 22. Do you do, you know?
Don't worry, Modelise. Look, you know, just it's you know, you, I said, you've so many coaches, so many captains, so many players you played with. I don't worry about that. I think it's people want to understand, like, you know, who you've been touched by, you know, the enjoyment you've had here. So, see, after Adrian, was it Martin Jones?
Martin Jones came along then. He was 2006 till 2008. And that's the season when he finished, and I finished at the same time in 08 to 09.
So I know during this period there would have been lots of tours and things like that, wouldn't there? As a team manager of the first team, would you and Jan go on the tours as well?
Yeah, we did. Not everyone, but we did go. I did write them down so I didn't miss any of the tours, you know. So we had as a team manager and admin then at that time. The first tour with Mike Gosling, we went to Italy, the Brescia area, and we went to Venice and we had a few games. We didn't lose any games. And the same with Madrid that was 95 to Italy. Madrid in 96 with Mike Gosling. And then Adrian came along when we did Slovenia and Croatia tour. That was a great tour. That was in 2003. And then there was another one. That was that time when I had cancer and I said, bugger it, I'm going to go to California anyway. You know, it's that decision. What do you do? And when you know you've got cancer, do I go or whatever? I said, right, I'm going anyway. It could have been my last. I'm going to California.
More like you've got to live life. You've certainly done that.
Yeah, with Adrian. And then we finished off with Sweden, where we went to Gothenburg in 2006 with Martin Jones, sir.
But so who would organise these? Would you get a company to do it for you, or does someone take on organiser?
That was through the captains and all that. So he didn't come to me. I made sure things are okay when he was organised, but I didn't organise any of the tours as such. That was done from the captain, from the coaches up.
So your role on tour would be what?
Well, I'd make sure that things are. Don't get out of hand and make sure things are fine. But really, it was great. You know, you didn't know, there was a great bunch of people, players there. You know, you know they were fairly level headed, but there were obviously one or two that might do something stupid, but nothing major.
But you look after them, and they looked after you.
Of course.
You know,
that's the way it was.
But you know, you have to take annual leave out of your job to do this. So this would take a lot of your holiday time with it.
Yeah, maybe, but. The thing was, most of these sort of 95, I was lucky then that I was retired as such, you know, since I had my cancer and everything. I couldn't work on from then.
Okay.
Because I'd colostomy bag and everything for 12 months.
Right.
I knew it was going to be reversed. But poor Terwin, you know, he's got it for life. So I admire him for that, really. So I was lucky. I knew I was going to have a reversal on my stoma.
Yeah.
And again, everything worked out. So I had a reversal and it was out of season.
Uh-huh.
So you know, as I said, that's why I didn't miss any games. I didn't miss any touring games.
But that's for like, what's that, 16 years, 17 years?
From 93 to 07, 08.
That's, 15 years.
15 years, something like that.
So you didn't miss any London Welsh first team game?
No, I didn't miss a game from that time.
That's remarkable. That's absolutely remarkable. Do you know what I mean? So that really is. Yeah. I
loved it. Part of it is a great honour for me to be doing that. To be in charge of something.
I'm glad you feel like that. But obviously, the club are lucky to have you as a volunteer doing that. Because am I right thinking you at training, you and Jan would do the food sometimes?
Yes, sometimes. Especially we did. We had some training weekends, you know, down the colleges and that type of thing. I went down to Surrey once, and then we couldn't find. They couldn't do the catering, so me and Jan went down the supermarket and bought bread and everything and this cheese and whatever we could put into, and we made sandwiches galore, you know, and filled them up, all kinds of stuff. And when I was in the Dragon and stuff, we used to come home and on a Friday evening, that's where you're in, Jan used to repair rip shorts and shirts at that time.
You've literally since you've come to London Welsh, you've either played or volunteered at the club from 65 till 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
That's some stint, isn't it, of playing and volunteering.
Oh, yeah. I was lucky because of my work, being in the plumbing industry, I could do that. And other people then, they're highfalutin huge jobs where they couldn't commit the time. Well, I could.
Well, we both could. London Welsh meant so much to you. You wanted to do that, and therefore you'd work, use your work around London Welsh commitments, even though that was unpaid and your work wasn't.
Yeah, I know. No, I was lucky. Very lucky.
We were lucky to have you doing that model. So that's what you've got to understand, that the club have been so lucky to have people like yourself who love the club and committed so much time to the club. So when you retired, you then became a supporter. And probably a volunteer still.
It's amazing, though, that the transformation, really, when you're in the first team as manager and stuff, you know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
You know who's married to who, who's going out with the girlfriends. You know, the usual stuff that goes on in the middle.
Are you saying you're a gossip?
Well, Jan used to love it. And you know who's going out with who and who's... Yeah. she used to love it, yeah.
But look, so you retire as a first team manager. So we then... So go through like a purple patch, really, because we were competing in the top part of the championship. And then, under Lynn Jones, we get promoted. And then we move to Oxford. Is that something that, lots of people went to Oxford, some chose not to go.
I know it's a hell of a transition.
Yes.
The only great thing about Oxford was the pitch. Stadia was all full of concrete, very cold. Basic, that's all I can put it to, really. But the pitch was lovely.
Yeah, I felt like we usually played on a Sunday because of the football on Saturday. Yeah. I just felt the stewarding was a bit, they thought we were all like football supporters. We were not like that, were they? There's some great times there, weren't there? There were great times.
Yeah, we played Wasps there, didn't we, during one holiday?
Yeah.
And we had over 10,000 people there. Yeah. And we thought, right, this is the stuff.
Yeah.
This is what we want.
It was good. It was good to experience that for the club.
But
it was sort of nice to come back to our home as well afterwards, wasn't it? Really,
I know. Yeah, the trouble was then at that level, if your team wasn't quite good, and they gave all their best, but bigger teams then come the last 10, 15 minutes, you could be losing 20 points to 10 or whatever the case was, and then the last 10 minutes, I might score 3 tries under the post. Instead of losing by 20-odd, he'd lose by 40-odd.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like that. That was the difference of the class of other teams then.
Yeah, I think, we gave it a crack. We probably didn't have the depth of squad. We had, our first team were probably good enough to stay up, but obviously not everyone can play their first team with all the injuries. But
As it happens at that time, the next season, the team that stayed up, the bottom team stayed up, but they only had a half amount of points as we did the season before when we went down.
Yeah.
So now that's the way it was.
Is a lucky, but I think, it just, things happen for a reason. And, we're back here. We played a couple of seasons in the championship, and we then we've sort of regrouped now. You know, we've got, so
yeah,
you say like we're a community club. There's no amateur or professional. We're a community club, and
yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but no. You know, you've enjoyed the last 5 years.
Been great that the amateur section and no disrespect, they're all amateur.
Yeah, they are.
People of the amateur side of the club has brought it along, right? But I don't know what they're going to do. If we went up to 2 South within the next couple of seasons or whatever, there would have to be some sort of restructuring as such. When they, you'd have to have somebody in a paid position maybe to be on site and to deal with players and all that type of thing. Do you think that would be the case?
I don't know. I think rugby sort of resetting itself, really. Mm. No one's sure what's going to happen to the championship.
No.
Will there be a Prem 1, Prem 2, and the championship becomes the new national one? So, I think what we got to do as a club is to continue doing what we're doing, being sustainable and not overreaching spending more than we've taken
in. Yeah, absolutely.
But we may need to adjust our outlook going forward in terms of how we might want to commercialise the assets around us and bring more money in so we can then look at attracting the talent we need.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, like everything else, if we do, I hope we do up. I know there's complications. If we do, we need the money and we need the organisation to run the club, you know, full time then as such, I presume, more than the amateur setup as it is now. I could be wrong there.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong. No. That's my feeling about it.
Hey, who am I to argue, Morris? You've been around rugby and London Welsh for 59 years. You know, rugby is evolving.
Yeah.
And where do you see our rightful place in the league structure as it currently stands, do you think?
I would hope it would be 2. It would be fantastic if it was into Division 1.
Yeah.
I think maybe down the road sometime it could be. But then again, it's going to be a complete kettle of fish for organisation and the structure and everything.
I think our club name deserves to be a national one with
I think so.
You know, Rostin Park.
Yes.
Blackheath, yeah, people like that. Yeah. You know, I mean,
Richmond,
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, we've got to just take our time.
One thing at a time, yeah.
But what key thing for me, I don't know about yourself, Boris, is to make sure all the people who play here and people who come and watch here enjoy themselves.
Oh, they know they're going to enjoy because we play the right rugby. The looser the games for London Welsh, the better, without doubt.
I agree.
Without doubt.
Look, you've been, I've got to sort of wrap up now, but look, you've been here for so long, you know, and you've volunteered, played, you know, you've made some lifelong friends here, haven't you? Yeah. I know you've mentioned a lot of them.
Yeah.
I'd like
to mention another few people.
Of course you can.
So when I came along initially through the rugby side, people are great players, really. Of course, I mentioned David Winward-Jones. There's a great character. Gin and bitter lemon. That was the staple diet of David, I must admit. Like, people like Colin Bosley, obviously, in that time, you know, great, great man, commitment to all positions within the club.
Yeah.
And then there's Dick Ellis, I knew back in the day. But I haven't seen a picture of Dick Ellis around here at all. And he was around when I just came along then. And obviously, it's like Stuart Davis.
Yeah.
You know, there's another nice guy, as we talk about nice guys, like Adrian Davis and people like that. He was always home. No matter who was at home, Stuart was here. No matter if the first team or whoever else was here, he was always here every Saturday, wherever the home teams were. There, Arthur Jones as well, he's been back in Wales for quite a while now. He's about 85, I think. Arthur, great guy. And obviously, Dr. Ken Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, there's the late Dr. Ken Thomas there. And, of course, Edgar Thomas, as we know, he did my job before I came along in the first team. I don't know how many years he did it. And he had those times. He used to run the touch with his flag and everything, you know.
And he did all the youth as well. He used to be driving from Kent to come here, Barrell said. No, so. But isn't it great, though? There's three generations of Edgar's family who are London Welsh. Barrell, Jack. Yes.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Obviously, you know more of that side than I would. And people like the late Ron Holly, you know, he's a general manager as well. I did a lot of work with him, a lot of work. And we used to go to the Middlesex Sevens when they were great days, you know, when... it was purely club sides.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to have representative teams then, and then they started changing the structure. And I think it lost its way from then on, but it was a great club competition, which we won, I think, 7 times, I think the record is. And the last time we won is 85, I think, yeah.
Oh, the year we went to Twickenham for the job player.
Yeah. Okay. 7 times we won the competition. Fantastic. And Ronnie Martin Nicholas, he did the secretary's job in the Drewers when I went up to the first team. Yeah. And of course, people around me in the first team was Terwing Williams, Pete Lowe. There's another great club man. Fantastic, isn't he? And he's still involved now in the first team.
Yeah, no, it's great. He loves
it. He was then, I know.
A great volunteer.
Yeah, and Peter Price is not well at the moment. They were a great team to go, especially on away trips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On the first team, we used to go by train, but everything was not to be, you know, precise and everything, you know, making sure you organize a train, organize a coach on the other side to drive you to lunch or whatever, and into the ground. And the same coming back, you had to be back at a certain time to catch the train to come home.
And would you have many overnight stays post-games of some of these fixtures?
Yeah, what I did in the end, we would start to go with the coach. We found it easier to go on the coach, you know, get a coach to come to Aldia Park and pick us up. And what I used to do, anything over 3.5 hours trip, used to stay overnight.
After the game?
No. Friday evening.
Right.
We'd come Friday evening, stay overnight for the game, stay in the hotel. And then, you know, wherever the coach was, he could have a committee room or, you know, to talk to the players with his flip chart and TVs and you name it. That's what I learned a lot of Griffo.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic. He knew it inside out.
Yeah.
But he has hell of a thing. Everything didn't go well, especially on match days. You know, the Rangers are normally they give you in touch with the catch judges and the people in the stand. And the Rangers used to be on the floor numerous times when things didn't quite go right. great times. I learned a lot of him, Clive Griffiths.
That's great. Look, you know,
yeah.
You know, you've mentioned so many great characters.
Yeah.
You know, it just shows that the depth of people who used to help London Welsh.
Oh,
so we can get so many sides out and make sure the supporters are entertained. But look,
during
your time here, you know, you've had so many memories. Which are those sorts of key memories that you hold dear to you? Is it you know, maybe it's too many to mention, but obviously you met your wife when you're here, late wife.
Yeah,
and
she came along, you know, but she was involved in the kitchen for years and years, really, and stuff like that. So, and I say her father was a treasurer back in the day. And that was great. And then I met her in Marlborough, of course, and the rest of history then. And then she came down to pick me up in the evening. Then she started sitting by my side, and that sort of involved into doing more, you know. So we were a great team in the end.
Look, and what a team both of you were, you know, do you know what I mean? So, and also we remember Jan with the dugouts are in her name, fantastic to have that.
Yeah.
Jimmy, look, more like it's been brilliant to speak to you today. But just, you know, on behalf of the club, I just want to thank you for, you know, playing for the club, but, you know, more importantly, sticking by the club and all those years volunteering. Yeah. I just want you to now to sit back, enjoy yourself, and watch the boys and girls play on the Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Carlos. It's been great. Thanks.
Diolch yn fawr iawn.
Diolch yn fawr iawn i ti. Diolch.